There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. It is the second Tuesday of the month. That's when we get to get visited in studio by the Sheriff of Mobile County, Sam Cochran. Thanks for being back.
Sean, glad to be here.
And lots to talk about. Got a lot of questions. But beforehand, a news story we just had reported from WKRG talking about graduation day at the jail. Say what? So,
Metro High graduated seven GED candidates today, this morning, and we had a little ceremony for them, and that's seven more that'll have a GED that would otherwise not have had an opportunity.
How's that process work? Somebody's in jail, because people aren't supposed to be in jail forever.
That's
a process where they're, you know.
We have the program available based on their good conduct, and
okay.
if they're you know, can be trusted and, you know, not some real serious offender, and some of them are scheduled to go to prison. I think of these seven that graduate, I think three are going to prison, and the others will eventually get out of their jail term after they serve their term. But even the ones going to prison, at least they've got an education and will maybe better comprehend things going forward. And some prisons offer additional opportunities for further education based on the GED.
Well, just in talking with you over time and reading stories, the education and a skill. You know, a trade or a skill that's learned in prisons. I know a lot of people just say, well, to heck with them, you know, they shouldn't do anything for them. But the stats show that if you give somebody the education, the skill, there's a lot less chance of them coming back in.
That is exactly right. If you just say the heck with them, they'll come right back to you. But
right.
This morning we graduated our 200th up to, I think, 207 this morning that we've graduated.
Really?
In the last
How long
few
has
years.
This program been going on?
It's probably about 7 years, I believe, now, 6 or 7
pretty
years.
Pretty good turnout.
Some slowing down at one time when the program itself switched from a pen paper type GED program to a computerized program, and so we had to change some stuff out, and it slowed us down, I think, 2 years ago. But we're hitting pretty good speed now with it.
You said pen paper to computerized. So is there a teacher, or is it on? How does this work?
We have teachers that are volunteers. The Goodwill Easter Seals partners with us, and without them we couldn't do it. But they have many volunteers, and
they come in like have class. Is
yeah.
it?
They have class. We have a little classroom set up by the chapel, and so they work there with one-on-one tutors a lot of times. And there's several teachers that volunteer, some retired teachers, and
good for
and
them.
Others. So you know, it's making a difference in these folks' lives.
You know, so they go and they. How long does it take? Is it a structured school year? I don't know how to say that, or is it just?
I think some of us, you know, have to work somewhat at their own speed, and then to do a lot of studying. And of course, they have to, you know, use the discipline and study in those conditions when they go back to their cells around others, and you know, it's a loud environment, and so it's a difficult thing. But they're pretty committed to it, and I checked some stats coming out here. We've graduated 39 in 2017 and 18, and of those 39, they've tracked 15 of them are employed.
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 Got a job.
Some of the others are probably in prison. So, you know, that tells us that it's probably at least they've, you know, gotten some employment and are staying out of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pragmatic thing, and it's easy, you know, easy for people to say, to heck with them, punish the criminals, don't do, you know, bread and water, do your time. But long term, looking at the stats, that just has them back on the dole, and we're paying for them to be in a jail or prison going forward. So, yeah, I mean, if this is happening and it keeps them from coming back, I got to say, I'm for it.
We had four or five family members there. One kid
for graduation.
Yeah, we invite the family members. Usually, it's just one parent. You know, maybe a mother and sometimes a sibling. But there was a grandmother there with another lady, and the kid said, "It's the first time I made my grandmother cry for something happy."
Well, maybe it's a turn.
It was.
Somebody's saying on the text line, Has the sheriff thought about trade school training, things like welding and plumbing? That's what we're talking about a little bit. Prison does.
Yeah, prison, I think, does that. I don't think the jail environment, we have it, although we did have a program with a business not far from the jail that does welding training, and we let a couple of people earn scholarships to go there, and so we've had a couple of them train in that program, but it's very, you know, we can only do one or two at a time.
And you said these are inmates that have shown themselves to deserve this.
Yeah, to be trustworthy and deserving, and that's usually
these aren't the ones flushing stuff down the toilets?
Well, I hope not, but yeah, I don't think so. These are pretty, pretty squared away kids, and one of them was, he looked like he was 22, 23, and he thanked everybody, but he said, I've mostly been incarcerated my entire life. I thought, my goodness.
Yeah, that stinks. And, maybe he sees a light and says,
I think so.
Speaking of the toilet thing, I made it as kind of a flippant remark, but I know the story, I think it was last week or whatever, that I didn't realize y'all dealt with that with the amount of, the plumbing issue.
The plumbing issue is a major problem, and they some will do it on purpose to stop stuff up, to disrupt, you know, things in the jail. They'll flush things and jam them up. Others are just lazy and won't get rid of the trash properly.
I mean, the list of things,
chips and bags. I mean, at some point we may have to, you know, have someone turn in their potato chip bag or something after they, you know, ate their goodies or something like that. But again, bear in mind what we're dealing with.
And yeah,
some
it's
of
true,
them are,
true.
Some of them are mentally ill too, you know, so it's what have they got to lose?
Which, by the way, I didn't get to talk to you about this before we went on there, but I don't know if you saw Cassie Fambro's story over at WPMI's website that there's some talk, I don't know how near and certain it is, but some talk about reopening Searcy.
I did see that, but then I think the final sentence was, but that's the problem, they don't have the money.
Right, but there's, because this is something we talked about way back when, mm-hmm. when this first went, I think in the it's been 7-8 years ago, maybe,
yeah,
or something.
When they closed Searcy, we knew that we would have an influx, and not all of them were able to blend back into the community.
Because in jail, you're housing people that, in your opinion, there are some people you're housing in jail that should be in a mental health facility.
Clearly in some type of mental health facility or in some kind of halfway house type facility, or in some should be completely, you know, housed completely and permanently.
All right, this is a... we go. It's always interesting questions we get on the text line when you're in here. This one, how do people get away with hard-to-read tag like covers, yellowish clear? I think I know what they're talking about. Kind of like a tag protector.
It's a violation of the law. They've got to be clear, and you can't cover it with certain, you know, transparent things, and it's got to be visible and all. And so it's just a... when they get away with it, an officer hadn't stopped them and ticketed them.
So the yellowish light color or something like that—that is against the law.
Yeah, if it's obliterating the ability, and unless it was so clear you can't really see that it's over there.
Right.
But most of those are violations of the law.
Okay. Well,
certainly,
hopefully.
You know, some people used to at one time try to put a little blue sheet of paper over or something, but yes. Again, it's a violation.
All right. We come back from the break. I want to talk about something you and I got to talking about during the news break here. And we got to talk about the case down in Florida and Stand Your Ground Law. And, you know, people talk about Stand Your Ground a lot. There are people call the show, have guests on, mm-hmm. or whatever. They're talking about Stand Your Ground. And I think people have some idea maybe what it means, but... what does it mean in Alabama? That's what we're going to find out when we come back. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Sheriff Sam Cochran, in the studio. Phone number, text line 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 118 FM Talk 106.5, and your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, in studio. We do this once a month. And reminder, too, you can get questions answered by going to social media platforms like your Facebook page or the app.
Sure. We have an app, Team Sheriff, and a Facebook page, and we have a website, mobileso.com, all of those things. You can send in questions, tips, crime tips, look up, see who's in jail, see if there's warrants out for someone.
And you said that's not just window dressing to say, hey, we're, you know, because there's some groups out there that say, yeah, we got a website, we have a Facebook, and they don't really do anything with it. Y'all are, like, very active with it.
Yeah, we're very active. We send out a lot of wanteds on it, and we have our Thug Thursdays, Felon Fridays, and something else on Wednesdays, and we've got a huge following of... we send something out, we pick, you know, one of the bad boys of the week and put it out there, and a lot of people look forward to that, and they help us round them up.
Is it successful?
It's very successful. Probably 2/3 of all that we put on there are picked up or surrender. It's amazing how you can publicly shame people into surrendering.
Wow. I mean, think about what you've probably gotten used to it now, but you just said 2/3 success rate with that. Is there any other method in law enforcement, one specific method to go get people that's that successful?
I don't think so. I mean, it's so powerful. I mean, it's far more powerful than the FBI putting up warrant posters in the post office, I guarantee you.
Right.
You know, because you just...
Nobody goes in there.
You can reach, exactly. You can reach thousands and thousands of folks instantly.
I mean, that's pretty heady stuff, actually, when you just said that 2/3 success rate. I mean, that
a lot of people like to follow crime and, you know, forensics files and things like that. Those have huge followings, and a lot of people kind of hold themselves out as little experts sometimes now they watch so many forensics files.
All right, Tom, I want to grab a call here from Sadie in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
How does one deal with the repeat, someone who has a history of house break-ins, who is a relative?
And what happened? And they're...
That if you have a person that you're related to, that you love, that you know, and has broken into your property more than once, how do you deal with it?
But a lot of people say tough love. You know, you warn them the first time, and then you just bring charges against them, even if they're your own relative. They've got to be held accountable and let the state step in and bring the charges.
And if that fails?
Well, you know, if it fails, you've got to protect yourself, you know, and keep them off your property and keep your property secure. But, you know, ultimately, we hope it won't fail, but I do recognize that our system of justice is very weak on property offenders, and they get 2 or 3 bites off the apple before they finally get sent off to the penitentiary, and then they build good time. And you know, it's a challenge for all of us in the criminal justice system to deal with repeat offenders.
So how, sir, do you suggest we defend ourselves?
Well, I mean, it's security systems, camera systems, as far as protecting your property, to where he knows if he comes on the property, you're going to have a video of him or something like that, and he's caught each and every time, and then file charges.
I guess I
appreciate.
Hey, thank you for the call. Yeah. We're talking, and we can grab a couple more and some text at 343-0106. You know, I talked during the news break at the top of the hour. We're talking about this Stand Your Ground case out of Florida. Explain kind of the case to people that didn't follow.
Well, Stand Your Ground is you don't have to retreat from someone that's bringing force against you or assaulting you or something. You don't have to run away from them. You can literally stand your ground and fight and defend yourself. And
is that a change from, was it different before? Because you will hear people say, well, this is a Stand Your Ground state, or this law is Stand Your Ground.
There's always been the rights to sort of defend yourself, but by the laws that they have passed, Stand Your Ground makes it a lot more plain common English of giving you immunity from prosecution if you meet those certain qualifications.
Okay, so I mean the opposite of Stand Your Ground would be somebody you would have to try to flee and escape.
Yeah, and all you had to do to prevent it was just leave, and the guy would have quit messing with you, but instead you just chose to stay there and the guy continued messing with you, and then ultimately you may have used deadly force or some type of force against him.
So a Stand Your Ground law says you don't have to flee. That person's about, you can stay right there where you are.
Right there where you are. Started off, you know, the castle doctrines where your house is your castle and you have a right to defend your house and use deadly force if someone's coming into it, and then it extended out into the curtilage. And so really the Stand Your Ground, yeah, that's kind of like the immediate area around your house. It's a legal term, but so the Stand Your Ground now is like, hey, just because it's not your house, you shouldn't have to cow down and let somebody assault you and not be able to defend yourself.
So if I'm not on my property, I'm at the gas station or out here on the corner here around from the station, I have those same rights to stand my ground?
Yeah, exactly. You have a right to defend yourself against an assault or against a robbery. Of course, robbery is a form of an assault. But the case in Florida that most people would be familiar with seeing on the news, initially the sheriff ruled it a Stand Your Ground thing. Now, I saw the video and I would have disagreed. I thought that the guy used excessive force, that the guy did come up and put a big shove and knock him down and hit the ground pretty hard, but the guy then backed away, and then you can see the guy pulling the pistol out, taking aim and shooting the guy as he's backing away.
Right.
So I figured what would happen, and it did happen. The state prosecutors came back, looked at it, and have charged him with manslaughter. That's probably the appropriate charge, and let a jury decide.
Okay, so for citizens hearing this, speaking of the situation in Alabama with Stand Your Ground, somebody comes up to you and threatens I mean, do they have to verbally threaten, menace? I mean, if that person comes running at you,
yeah.
You know, I mean, do they have to say, "I'm running at you to hurt you"? I mean, mm-hmm. or do they have to? I mean, if they're just running at you,
well, it sort of falls back on the victim to be able to articulate why they perceived it as a threat or a deadly threat. And part of the law in the law says you can't go provoke an instance and then you stand your ground. You can't go pick a fight with somebody
and then
the guy starts fighting back. So I was standing my ground and shot and killed him.
Okay, so yeah, so if you provoke the fight, yeah. you lose the right to stand your ground.
That's exactly right.
But what about the idea that it's always equal measure versus equal measure? In other words, I'm going back out here on this, I'm going back out mm-hmm. on the corner of the property here where the station is, and somebody comes up and they're pushing me, harassing me, or going to try to do whatever, and I'm standing my ground, and they have, I don't know, they've got a baseball bat, mm-hmm. and I have a concealed handgun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that person doesn't have a firearm. I do. What if that person's going to hit me with that baseball bat? I shoot them? What? Mm-hmm.
If you articulate that you feared for your life, that baseball bat, if it's a good size slugger or whatever, right. and you know this guy's swinging it hard enough, or let's say I already swung once and hit you in the leg or the arm and may have already fractured a right. bone or something, you know that's deadly force that he's using against you. A blunt instrument will kill you. And
so even though it's not a gun, people get focused on gun versus
gun to gun, bat to bat, you know,
right.
just like law enforcement, we always use one step higher than the force that's used against us.
Right. So in that case, because I can articulate,
that's right.
I thought this person with the baseball bat was trying to kill me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were trying to kill me. So,
you know, they may have verbally said, "I'm going to kill you." They swung right. as hard as they could. You may have just barely missed, you know, stepped out of the way, and he's coming back at you again. And you're, let's say you're even backing up or something, but he's still coming at you. You know, that would be reasonable to use some type of force, including deadly force, if someone was coming after you like that. A fractured skull will kill you.
What about this? You mentioned robbery. So somebody who is coming to mug you or something mm-hmm. like that. So once again, you're not in your home, but you're out wherever.
That's a prime example. Okay. Stand your ground.
Hey, I'm going to come over there and give me your wallet. Yeah, give me your, you know, I'm going to take your car. What do you, I mean, at that point, they've threatened that they're going to take your car or take your wallet.
Right, that's a robbery. You know, when you threaten to use force against someone to remove property, that's robbery. It can be armed robbery. It can be second-degree robbery without a weapon, but they're still robbing you. Well, remember a case here in Mobile probably 2 years, I think, out in Tomanville. A guy went in a store and was robbing it, and somebody else in there with a gun shot the robber. And
to that's protect kind of, the to protect, innocent.
Yeah, you can use deadly force to protect someone else against deadly force. But, you know, it's something we don't try to push, you know. But you know,
Lord knows, hopefully nobody ever has to be in a situation to do it. I mean, that's the perfect scenario is not having to ever be there. But I think people, at least for the mental exercise, they should think about these things before.
If they're going to have a concealed weapon, they mm-hmm. need to have mental thought processes over and over about what they would do in these particular given circumstances. If you're in the mall and somebody starts shooting, you see them just shooting innocent people, you know, and you have an opportunity to intervene,
right.
that would be more than justifiable. And it's happened time and time across this country now as more and more people have armed themselves.
Yeah, what are those stats like? You've talked about the increases in concealed carry permits you've seen for Mobile County.
Oh, it's just through the roof.
Let's say in the last 10 years, percentage, what do you think
probably,
the increase?
Probably tripled, I think, in the last 12 years.
Tripled?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
We have 50-something thousand people with permits in Mobile County.
50,000?
50,000.
I wonder if that would be billboard material as people enter Mobile County from the west and the east.
Be
and the
aware.
North. Be aware. Welcome
here.
To Mobile County. There's 50,000 of us with concealed carry permits.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
That's correct.
We have time. Okay. We'll take a quick call here. Robert is in Mobile. You're on with the sheriff. Hey, Robert.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I live near a pond out in West Mobile. And I have a lot of snakes, water moccasins, and rattlesnakes that constantly come in my yard. And I've tried snake away and other products from like Home Depot, so forth, that doesn't really work. My question is, if I take my judge revolver or my Glock and start shooting these snakes, I have kids and so forth, start shooting these snakes, will I be in violation of the law or will I get in trouble?
If you're in the city limits, you would be in violation of the law. It's discharging a firearm in city limits now. Whether
in
or not,
the county,
in the county you're fine. If you're out in the county, you don't have that city ordinance, so you can do it anywhere in the county. If you're in the city and you feel fearful or something like that, you know, you may talk to your neighbors or something, let them know what you're doing or something. But just, you know, you don't want to alarm your neighbors. I would tell you, a few years ago or a couple of years ago, someone had a rabid raccoon a few houses down from where I live, and they had called the rabies or people, and it was going to take a number of hours, and the thing was really hissing at them and on their front porch. And I said, look, tell your neighbors, expect a gunshot and shoot it.
Yeah.
I mean, just – but I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's – but, you know, if it's a, you know, a snake and it's a dead, a poisonous snake, you know, if it's truly something like that, you know, it's a judgment call you'd have to make. But you don't want to alarm your neighbors and be shooting all the time or something, because, again, it's against the law and you could get arrested.
There you go.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Hey, sure. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's – heck, that talking about rabid critter story, that's like the new, I mean, who knew we would have the summer of rabid foxes?
Foxes,
huh?
I know, yeah. You need to carry a gun on a golf course over in Baldwin County.
That's right, but you know what? That's Sheriff Mack's problem, not your problem, right?
That's right.
Yeah, leave
that's
that with it. If people want to, once again, talk about the app where folks can go to download that and what it does.
Go to the Google Store and download the app either way, and you can access this 24 hours a day. You can access the warrants. You can give us crime tips. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, and we'll keep you up to date on all the latest crime and crime trends, and solicit your help and support in apprehending some of the criminals in Mobile County.
All right. Two-thirds success rate. That is awesome. That is awesome. What a stat. What a stat. Sheriff, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's always my pleasure, Sean. Thank you, and great hearing from your listeners.
All right. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Talk about the Delta Alliance and what's going on with the Mobile Tensaw Delta. We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile online, fmtalk1065.com. Remember, streaming us at TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. By the way, too, a couple texts still coming in for the sheriff, but like this one, didn't they repeal the concealed carry license requirements in Alabama? You know, this is what happens when bills are brought up, and when bills are brought up in session, and then the rest of the story is not told, people think that became the law. I mean, we've dealt with this on the outdoor side, I know, on the deer baiting bill, because something will pass the Alabama House. But that doesn't mean it's going to pass the Senate. Doesn't mean it gets signature from the governor. But everybody just saw that story said it passed in the House, so therefore it's a law. Same thing. Like HB 46 or HB 56, something. I think HB 56 was the bill. It passes in one of the houses of the legislature, but does not become law. So, no, it is. You still have to have a concealed carry permit. Now, there are some changes over the last few years for the length of the permit. Now, you can go as long as 5 years with that permit. Also, we went from a shall issue to a may issue state, and there's some nuance and some changes in that. And also, the age from 21 down to 18, but still, you have to, if you're going to conceal carry in Mobile County, Baldwin County, and I think all 67 counties in Alabama, you do have to have a concealed carry permit. All right, good to talk with this. We talked about this about a month or two ago, but any excuse I have to get Russell Ladd back into the studio, I'll jump at it. And Francis Coleman, thanks for being here with the Delta Alliance. I got that right, Delta Alliance?
Right. Alabama Delta Alliance.
All right.
You want to be, you know,
all right, no, I do.
Precise.
I want to have it correct. I have the website marked that I go to, but the name, if somebody is Googling, looking for this, give us a web address so they can follow along. Where do they go?
It is, I believe it's...
AlabamaDeltaAlliance.com.
There we go.
There you go.
And so then, of course,
AlabamaDelta.com. No alliances. AlabamaDelta.com.
That's good, because, Mr. Ladd, I can't spell alliance. So Alabama Delta is a lot easier for me.
Too many A's.
That's right. It's, you know, and then there's an I in there somewhere. So AlabamaDelta.com. And what is the Alabama Delta Alliance? What's going on with this? What's the purpose?
All right, the purpose was...
I'm going to get you a little closer to that mic there.
A few years ago, we felt like we did not have enough information to the public on access to the Delta. So we have made a website that covers all of the landings from Fort Morgan and Gulf Shores all the way to Jackson, Alabama.
Okay.
Our interest is the landings from the causeway to Jackson, Alabama. And there are many more landings on the east side, in the Baldwin County side, than there are on the Mobile River side.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're all in an interactive map. You hit on one of them, and it's going to give you the picture of the landing. It's going to give you the amenities of the landing. In other words, what time it opens and closes. Is it for free? Does it have lighting? Does it have
parking spaces?
Parking spaces, have sanitary facilities. It'll go through the whole works on the landing and what is there. And its intent is to give access and also to promote ecotourism for the Delta.
Now, this is, I mean, let me tell you all something about Mr. Ladd. The fact that you're inviting more people into the Delta, you know, that's a brave thing. You're a man who cherishes it more than anybody I know, and that you would invite people to come into your Delta. You know, I'm surprised. That is very, it's very giving of you and not selfish. So thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome, but I'll tell you, to get on a landing and have a bunch of kayakers show up, oh, it's kind of like ants on a piece of pound cake. You can't get away from them.
But, you know, across the country, we're seeing this trend toward ecotourism.
Right.
And people want to get out and mingle with nature in a nature-friendly fashion. And the Delta.
And let's define ecotourism, because, you know, I grew up in the shadow of this man sitting right next to you here, and that was eco. We did eco things all the time, but that involved you know, fishing and hunting and frogging and all these things in the Delta we did growing up. But when you hear ecotourism, there's a different kind of bent to it these days, right? Is this about non-consumptive? Is this versus fishing and hunting?
It's about, God, I hate to use such a trendy word as footprint, but a lot of kinds of tourism, they do have larger footprints.
Right.
They have resorts. And,
right.
and all of these are wonderful, but they can be destructive to...
Sure.
to the natural environment, or altering, if we don't want to say destructive. And eco-friendly tourism is where you observe, as in birding,
right?
Or you,
which, by the way, is
there.
Huge in our state.
Oh,
it's
God,
unreal.
Yes.
The numbers, and I mean, always blow me away. How much
shocking.
Money? Yeah.
And they're such low-impact tourists, too. I mean, you don't see a bunch of birders, you know, getting right. drunk on the side of the road while they're birding.
I can tell you something about some kinfolk here, Francis, but I don't want to get them in trouble here.
And things like the Delta offers, whether it's canoeing and hunting and fishing, mm-hmm. that you can get out in nature, but you're not doing any major
right.
damage or alteration, but yet... You know, the
renewable resources and non-consumptive.
Yes, belongs to all of us. Get out there and love it.
Okay, well, I mean, when you talk about the landings or, you know, launches, a place where y'all back ends, you know, where you're putting the boat in the water, there's a lot of frustration for a lot of us about the Chocolata launch closure, which has now been alleviated and is back open. But it is, you know, I guess growing up here, I'm just used to the number of launches. It wasn't until I had friends come from other parts of the state come to go with me, and they go, y'all don't have a whole bunch of places to launch. I mean, I guess growing up with it, Mr. Ladd, it was what it was, you know?
Well, you're probably like me. You have one landing that you're used to going in and out of. You don't realize
that's correct.
There's another 15 landings up and down the Delta.
Right. You do. You go to your same, you have kind of have a pattern.
You know, and one thing that I found is there's a lot more camaraderie and socializing in the Delta than there is fishing and hunting. It used to be primarily fishing and hunting and getting up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. There are some people that do it, and I'm all for mm-hmm. them. Of course, I did it when I was their age, but there's not as much wildlife in the Delta, nor as much fishing in the Delta, other than saltwater fishing.
Right.
And when the speckled trout and the redfish come in, I won't tell you, you can't find a parking place anywhere around the causeway further up the Delta.
But that's the problem, the parking, right? I mean, I've talked with people in the state that say, hey, we're even talking about the issues for Dolphin Island, and talking to Mayor Collier about it, said, listen, you can put a launch here, but where do you put the cars? Where do you put the trailers?
That's right.
You know, that's a tough thing.
And the same thing with beach access, the mm-hmm. same way. You can have a great beach access, but you also have to have a place to put people's cars, and in the case of launches, their trailers.
What about, you're talking about getting this information out through the Alabama Delta Alliance, making people more informed. I know probably bringing in tourism from elsewhere, but still the number of people that are driving across the Bayway right now, or driving across the causeway right mm-hmm. now, that have never been in the Delta. Local folks. I'm not talking about folks from out of town. Local folks. That number is pretty high.
Sean, I
took a lot of people in the Delta with my little outboard, and 3 or 4 people at a time in the past 25 years. But now I'm finding that Ben Raines, mm-hmm. Jimbo Mehta, The outdoor, who's the pontoon boat, Francis?
Well, the name escapes me.
Well, anyway,
but, out of Five Rivers.
Well, they go out of
the Pelican.
They go off the causeway out of Five Rivers. There are plenty of access for people to go and want to see the Delta, and it's working very well.
But you're right, Sean. I used to blast across the Bayway for 20 years between, you know, coming from Silver Hill, going to the newspaper office, and never gave what was up to my north a thought, except that what a beautiful,
it's pretty
beautiful
right,
sight, but ignorant of what was there.
Well, you know, I'm always torn with this, too, because unlike Mr. Ladd, I can be selfish. I grew up along that causeway in the Delta, and part of me would like to say, I'm the last person in, close the door, right? There's that attitude, but if we're looking to protect it, if we're looking to have, you know, people make decisions on water quality and all these things, I think then you actually, the more the merrier, the stronger your argument is, right? The more people that appreciate it, you can get consensus. You can get things done.
Well, one of the things we'd have to take into consideration is Forever Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And Forever Wild is a law passed by the legislature of the state of Alabama, and we need the support of the state, of the citizens of the state of Alabama.
And so it's not a sure thing.
Delta,
we've seen that in the past.
Yes. If we promote the Delta and we promote it, then we're more than likely to get the public to vote for Forever Wild, which is very important.
And to for the public to remind their legislators, you know, we want Forever Wild. We cherish Forever Wild.
Right. And, I mean, that is...
know how it is at budget time. It's like, I wonder where we could get some money.
That's
look
for sure.
Look at Forever Wild and all that money just sitting there.
It's strange to me to tax the state tax itself, but that's a whole other conversation. You know,
with this is oil and gas money. This
right, but I'm saying it's in last session, they talked to one of the... I'll say it and get myself in trouble. It's always the cockamamie ideas that came out of Montgomery was to impose a property tax on the acreage of Forever Wild to tax to go back to the state general fund. It was their way to get the money because they couldn't get it out of oil and gas trust fund. They would just tax the land that's also state through Forever Wild to give money back to the state to go in the general fund.
Makes perfect not sense.
That's Montgomery ease. That's how they do it. All right, coming right back, we'll talk more about what's going on and how you can get involved with the Alabama Delta Alliance. AlabamaDelta.com, the name of the website. Check it out there. Got questions? We'll get them answered. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Talk about the Alabama Delta Alliance. Russell Ladd and Francis Coleman in AlabamaDelta.com, right? That's the website. They left Alliance out because I can't spell it, and I appreciate that. And Mr. Ladd, we were talking about during the break there, too, just a side note for fishermen and fisher ladies here along the coast and the Delta. You know, your stories and video you put out some years ago talking about the changes specifically for Chukvi Bay, but we're talking about the fishing, the freshwater fishing, because earlier you said saltwater fishing, talking about how good, but the freshwater fishing, in your words, by not saying anything, you think has declined.
It's definitely declined. I can remember there were what we call bunches that totally surrounded Chukvi and Grand Bay.
Explain the bunches. Yeah, what are bunches to folks?
A bunch is some split grass that grows about 35 or 40 feet actually off the bank and in the water. It never goes to dry land, and it's always got at least a foot of water in it. But the brim and the we call them bonnet perch, but the shell cracker, they would spawn in these bunches, and you couldn't catch them until you got tied. Got up to about 2 feet of water in there, and it would go to like 2.5 feet. And then when it got just right, it was a field day. You could just, every time you dropped a cork and a worm in, you were going to catch a brim or a bonnet perch. And I've seen as many as 125 to 150 boats fishing Chukvi at one time.
And all catching?
All catching fish coming from the causeway. And the biggest horsepower we had in those days was like a 10 horsepower, maybe a 7.5.
Y'all that haven't done it, that's wanting it, because that's a long ride
from
the causeway to Chukvi with a 10 horse.
That's right. And they rented boats on the causeway, so all you had to have was an outboard motor. And there were 10 Lizzies out that you'd just take home, and you'd go back with the car and put it back on the boat and ride up to Chukvi or Grand Bay, All Bay Grass.
So what happened? Why is the freshwater fishing not what it used to be?
We don't know. Mother Nature. But they all disappeared. And the only thing we can say is it caused them to disappear is what you call eutrophication. Eutrophication is too much nutrition in the water coming from upstate so that the plants did not have to have the root system. They could get all the nourishment they needed with less root system. And when you have less root system, then the plants just float away. And
like we see
it floating away today, and
sure.
it's just disappearing. But that's what they're attributing to is eutrophication.
Well, that's one of the problems, too. We can do a lot here, and then people can look through the website, ways to get to know about the Delta and explore the Delta. But we can do all we want right here to protect, but we have the issue. You know, we're dealing with, we're downriver from everybody else in the state of Alabama and parts of Georgia and parts of Tennessee and Mississippi.
That's right.
So we take on their problems, you know, that they come here.
And one of our partners, big partner in what the Delta Alliance is doing, the National Estuary Program, you've met Roberta Swan, they, through some Restore Money grant and some National Fish and Wildlife money, are about to launch a complete study of this watershed. And Roberta was telling us recently that it will include looking at how to protect the headwaters, the stuff that's coming down into our delta and out through our bay. And it will also look at, it will try to answer questions like, why are the trees dying? Why fewer of your freshwater fish, all kind of, what's the deal with the sediment? So I'm not sure what her target date is, but it should be here in the next couple of years, I believe.
Hopefully it would be in line. I always thought about if they do ever get started with the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project and they're doing what they want to do with the Bayway, maybe they can do some studies on if we...
Right.
The jury is out. I thought I knew what I was talking about, but the jury is out whether removing sections of the causeway would benefit or not. I'm one of the old school people that thinks it would. Some people say it doesn't do any good, but it's a whole, you know. But hey, if we're going to be spending federal dollars here,
we'll be studying. We may as well study. I think,
Sean, interestingly enough, talking about the bunches and the fishing in the spring, it also went in the wintertime, because when you had tons of brim and goggle eye and bonnets in the delta, they had to go somewhere in the wintertime. So I've seen mallard fork and sand bow and oak bow and a lot of these creeks, boats just lined up. You could almost walk from boat to boat, and they would fish down the middle of the creek in the channel, all catching fish, and they would come from either the landings on the east side of the delta or from the causeway. And you'd go to those landings, and you'd see predominantly Pensacola and Florida tags on those cars. They in the wintertime. I don't know whether they came in the summertime, I mean in the springtime, because I didn't go in and out of those landings
in the
spring. But in the wintertime, you would see lots of Florida cars over there, and you don't see them anymore. They aren't there anymore.
You know, I've seen changes in the short time. I started in the mid-1980s in the Delta. But I want you to tell folks, when did you start going to the Delta? What year was that, Mr. Ladd?
Oh, 1946, as soon as we could get gasoline after the Second World War.
Yeah, and so your perspective on it is so unique because you've watched it for so long. And I want to point out, this is a man who has all the time there, and you're inviting. You want people to come experience this. You're trying to, through this system, get people out there.
I do, and I want people to enjoy it. It's there. I've enjoyed it. I want the folks and their children and grandchildren to go in and enjoy the Delta.
But you're not wanting them to come to your secret bass holes,
well,
are
now,
you?
Bass fishermen, let's not get on the secret hole. In fact, I don't tell anybody where I catch my fish. That's another long story.
Right there in the mouth.
But that's right. In the mouth. All of them in the mouth on a hook. Too.
That's right. Yes, sir. Okay. I see on the website, too, there's a way to sign up. You want us to sign up? How does that work?
We want to see a real cross-section of support. You click on that. You answer a couple of questions. No meetings, no dues, no solicitation. Just you're showing us your support, and we'll list it on the website, you know, and you'll see, 100 or so folks already, and businesses as well.
All right. So very good. Y'all check it out. I'm going to put the link up on my Twitter feed, but if you want to go straight there, alabamadelta.com, and we'll talk about this more.
And click on, I believe, from memory, click on About Us.
That's correct. Yeah, okay. Well, there's a Get Engaged.
Okay,
Get Engaged
there
to sign up. And, but you'll see it when you go there along the top. A great-looking website and great work, and I appreciate y'all stopping by again.
Thank you.
Come back soon.
Anytime.
Okay, we're going bass fishing. You going to show me that spot?
Yeah, I'll show you.
Okay.
I'll show you my old, as long as you don't tell anybody.
That's right. Then they'll push me over the boat on the way back down the river.
You,
yeah, that's right. Oh, I know how to work. He'll show me the hole, and then he'll send me packing somewhere halfway
sleeping
down Raft River.
The
all right, 158 Paul Feinbaum on the way. Next, check out podcasts of this show, morning show, all our evening shows, weekend shows. They're online at fmtalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcast. 40 hours a week of local live content put up for you to listen to in a podcast form. You can also subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, go to Spotify, and also iTunes, the same app you use to stream the station. Grab podcasts of the show right there. All right, we'll see you in the morning for Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5.